Hello, good evening, and welcome to episode 138 of the Cantina MX podcast. It is Thursday, May 31st. We are exactly 2 weeks away from starting the World Cup. It's a World Cup summer. The best kinds of summers are World Cup summers, as we all know. And we've got one coming up in a couple of weeks with the first game that I think everyone is just going to be dying to see. What a great way to kick off the World Cup, Russia-Saudi Arabia. Let's all tune in for that. My name is John Jagu. Glad to have you with us. We have a lot to get to tonight. It was going to be kind of like a what I would call a slow news day podcast. Well, that changed dramatically over the past couple hours, so we have a lot to talk about. In particular, the Chivas, whatever you want to call it, debacle, I guess. Cluster. I think the German word might be Klausterfuchen, but we will talk about that here in a little bit with our panel. And the person you just heard laughing there is in Orange County, California, joining us. Joel Aceves joins us. How are you, Joel?
Pretty good, John. I'm doing pretty good despite the news.
Yeah. Were you taken by? Honestly, I just in hearing your personal history with Chivas and knowing a little bit about the history of the team, I don't think that anything like this could ever shock you anymore at this point. I mean, you're so desensitized to it. They could cut Almeida's head off and blood would be spraying all over you. Yeah, and you'd be like, this is like Tuesday for a Chivas fan.
Yeah. No, I was. I'm not as shocked. When I was shocked was when Chepo was sacked. Because Almeida arrives and Chepo's conducting his midweek practice.
Right.
And this guy, you know, there's reports that he's arriving with his coaching staff and suitcases for
5 suitcases full of clothes
each. Yeah. So yeah, and I remember hearing that and I was like, no, I didn't want to believe it, John. And so now this it wasn't surprising Almeida being sacked or pushed out, just because it was, I saw it coming. The cards were in the table, John.
And what did the card say, Joel? It was
any minute now. I mean, I think the fact that Almeida kept winning like Copa MX or Conca Champions, I think that was prolonging him, you know, from just being outright sacked earlier. But the relationship with Jose Luis Higuera, who is the CEO, he's the guy that brought him in, that had fallen apart way back, you know.
Well, it fell apart because Higuera was doing to what Almeida, what he'd done to Chepo as far as wooing other coaches. So I'm sure that, you know, Almeida didn't take too kindly to such acts, you know, such public and very public acts. Did he take a picture with Gaixinha when he was in Scotland?
Yeah,
and he posted it on his Twitter.
Yeah, and by that point, you know, things had turned toxic already. At that point, they weren't even talking to each other. The relationship wasn't there anymore.
Do you think that Almeida at that point would have to call Jorge Giorgi and say, "Oye, Jorge, le dices a Higuera que..."
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, well, that was the thing too, because Vergara hasn't really been much in the picture. He's been handing over the reins to his son. So maybe some of you guys have seen pictures where the dirigentes are there, and he's a really tall guy, shaggy hair. Right. And that's his son, Amaury, and he's the one that was... He was one of the dudes that was in charge of Chivas TV, and he's been working really close with Higuera, and I think that's his hope, that he takes over the club, that Amaury
This is the guy they want to take over the club, this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, he's teaching him the ropes, and yeah, Amaury's been, you know, he's basically with Higuera all the time, and they even one of the last FMF meetings with the owners, it was both of them that showed up, Higuera and Amaury.
So would he be a Minigera?
I don't know. It's hard to say what he will be, you know. I don't know yet.
Well, before we get into more details, Hobie, we should, I don't want to, you know, monopolize the entire conversation with Chivas without bringing in our other panels who's joined us over in Kyle, Texas. Going to teach us a little bit about judo and jiu-jitsu tonight in regard to Sergio Ramos. Joining us is Albert del Chiquiscampa. Albert, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing good. How's it going?
Glad to have you on. Glad to have you on. Albert, were you? Now, Joel says that he was not surprised at all about the news. The signs were all there. Joel was shorting Chivas because of this. Were you surprised at all, Albert, as a casual, neutral observer of all things Chivas, as I am?
I was just following it from a latest point of view, and so I was a little bit surprised. I thought he was really, made a lot of faith in the love that they see, love the player. His division. Yes. If I'm not mistaken, you have sort of
no. As you were saying, we just went ahead and...
Oh. Yeah, he was sort of if I'm not mistaken, it seemed like he sort of pushed out. He it seemed like he loved the team, he supported the players and everything, and to me, looking at it from his perspective, it was a surprise.
Well, you know, to a man, the players have come out publicly, which is one of the, I suppose, benefits of social media, and have posted their outright support for their coach. And you know, a lot of, at least from what I was able to gather in doing a little recon before we came on the show, is that the fact that that Almeida was persuading the players to speak out publicly about the fact that they hadn't getting paid and hadn't getting their bonus evidently did not sit well with the front office either. So there's I understand making a change, and that's fine, and I get that. But you make a change at the end of the season so that the new guy can come in and start preparing for the next season. You know, the Chivas preseason starts next week, and in fact, they brought it up a week, which is apparently another thing that the front office did to the players. You know, some guys are out of the country, some guys are off the continent altogether, and they were expected to start the second week of June. Now they're expected to start the first week of June, and it's you know, Chivas is, once again, a self-inflicted mess, and it seems like, and we'll bring Joel back here, and I didn't mean to mute you, Joel, but you were getting your blenders going there, so we heard. I know you're making all your licuados, your healthy licuados for us, but Joel, I mean, I look at a team like Chivas and go, you know, how on earth could they, you know, be so dysfunctional? But the reality is that for the better part of, at least 20, 25 years, Chivas has always been dysfunctional.
Yes, it's been a real lack of professionalism from the club, just the way it's been managed. So, mismanaged for a very long time. Where they never have any, seldomly I'll say they have like long-term projects.
And it's not just the Vergara era. I mean, it was before Vergara. It was before pre Vergara. I mean, this is something that has, this is not a recent trend. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, when I started following Chivas, the club didn't have money. I mean, they were going bankrupt. That's when you had La Promotora. You know, they rented out the club to,
What, they rented out the club like you could rent a car?
Pretty much, man. Like, they leased like it for 10 years.
You go to the airport and you see Hertz, you see Avis, you see Dollar, you see Chivas.
It was in a 10-year lease.
The Chivas booth.
Yeah, 10-year lease. And you would think, okay, you have 10 years to get your finances in order. And it didn't get to 10 years. It got to 9. And then you know, the majority of the socios sold their stock.
Right.
I mean, how bad are things that you're selling, you'd rather sell your stock in a team?
And I'm sure that socios like that have probably had the stock for
A pretty family. Long time. Yeah. It was inherited for most people. People that still hold it, I'm pretty sure, is the De La Torres, but that's another story, John.
Is it true that Almeida paid the bonuses?
No, I mean, they didn't. Supposedly, they paid him off, but they hadn't given him. Wait, you mean to the players?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Why would he pay them?
Well, they weren't. No one else was paying them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure they have just enough money as him, you know.
Okay, I saw that. I saw that on the Twitters or someplace, and I was like, "What? Almeida paid the players their bonuses just to be, you know, a good coach."
Well, I mean, the thing is that I mean, well, it's just. You know, Chicas and I were talking before we got on the air about you know, Chivas and, you know, just because of who they are and with their tradition and then their personnel decisions and how they build their team. It seems like the last thing they want to be is one of those teams that, you know, that goes through coaches like when you open a cereal variety pack when you were a kid, out of the little boxes, you didn't just, oh, I'm going to take this one, take this one, take this one. I mean, there's no stability. There isn't anything. And because of the fact that their player pool is so limited, do you think that they'd want to have maximum control over trying to get that worked out to their advantage? And it hasn't been like that. And it makes no sense. Now, I know that Almeida isn't like a god, but he had been there for a few years, won some trophies with them. But over the past 40 games, Chivas only won 9 of them. So that's you're batting .250 at that point as far as wins. That's not a particular. These are league games, of course. That is not a particularly good record to have over your last 40 games where you only win 9. I'm not sure how many he tied, but you're gonna have a hard time getting anywhere because of that. So I think, as Joed pointed out, the fact that he kept winning something was helping his cause, and even after the Cuenca Champions, then I guess that wasn't enough. But obviously something happened within the past couple of days, because again, these are decisions that you don't make, you know, in the middle of getting ready for next season. So there was obviously, I guess, you know, the rupture finally or the bandage wasn't good enough to take care of the rupture, unfortunately. And now Chivas fans, Did you say, Chiquis, that you saw some Chivas fans are not going to start rooting for MLS sides because they can't deal with Chivas anymore?
Yeah, I think Stray Goat changed his name to the MLS Goat.
Wow.
I saw players, Luiso was like calling players to root for León. All kinds of stuff going on.
Well, you know, if you know the Chivas fans that are listening, I mean, they can certainly. It's too bad that Chivas USA isn't around anymore, because this would be the perfect song for Chivas USA. Outstanding. Well, we do want to welcome in the fourth member of our panel tonight. Daniel Preciado joins us from Escondido. Daniel, as a casual neutral observer of Chivas, but yet someone who enjoys the Schadenfreude more so of Chivas misery than any of us. What goes through the mind of a I'm not going to call you a Chivas troll, but someone who likes to get their goat, so to speak.
Yeah. Honestly, it's disappointing for them. It looks like they're going to probably more than likely be a shell of themselves come December. And I don't know. It doesn't look promising, both in the short term and long term. Luckily for them, they're suspending relegation, so they get to play with a limited squad and not worry about being relegated. So, I mean, bright side.
That's those are some very valid points. And again, you bring up the Club World Cup. It seems to me that if there was a rupture, you know maybe the they have a professional conversation and they say, hey, you know what? Look, we got the Club World Cup, so just stay this last, this last Clausura. We'll go to the Club World Cup. You can end it there, and let's just try and make the most out of that. But now they're going to have to – they're scrambling to get a coach. I did hear the name Vucetich, but I just don't see Joel, how on earth Vucetich could even possibly coach Chivas after what Vergara did to him in the national team. So I think that's
– Yeah, he already turned them down in the past. That's when they had the other GM. I forget his name right now. He used to be at Monterrey. And then he used to be at Querétaro. He came from Querétaro.
Ordiales.
Yes, Jaime Ordiales. So that was a big reason Chivas had brought in Ordiales, and it was in hopes that he could lure in Buse. But Buse blames Vergara. He says that's the big reason he got sacked from the national team after the Costa Rica match. That Vergara was one of the owners that was.
Because Buse was whispering in Chicharito's ear, whiff on this ball, 3 yards away from goal. Yeah, no, I've always thought that's just not going to happen. So does that mean that Joel?
Say time heals wounds, John. Who knows?
Honest, honest question. Give me an honest answer. Did Güero Real's phone ring tonight?
No. Güero Real is part of the De La Torre clan, and one of the dudes running the show at Chivas is Higuera. He wants nothing to do with some of that people. So, and plus, he's working at Toluca doing what he does best, which is work with youth. And I think that's why he gets a lot of flack. Real gets attacked a lot. His stint as coach hasn't been the best. He did lead the team to a Copa Libertadores final. But even that run was very shaky. So as coach, he's never been good. But as youth development, his track record is second to none as far as Mexican youth development goes.
So if that's the case, then knowing that Chivas is at least for now having to rely on the player pool that they have, which is very limited. It's limited to the borders of the country and other special situations, we'll just call that. But they want to field a team of Mexican nationals. If that was the case, then wouldn't they want to make their youth system, from little kids up to the reserve squad as what's the word I'm looking for? As harvestable, I guess, as possible, to where they have a, they can somewhat control their own player pool, so to speak, and then bring in a coach that's going to be there for a while so that every level of every team is going to be playing at a certain.
The money's in there, John. And even like, what was it, maybe 2 years, about a year, 2 years ago, the team, the club had been releasing, they had released a lot of staff. They released their nutritionist. They released their doctor, which was Ortega. He's highly regarded, considered one of the best in Mexico for sports. And, he was on call and they let him go. So there just hasn't been money for that. And I think just all the bad decisions, like how you start a project with the Cruyff Institute and they bring in like 10 coaches. And then you don't even see it through. And then, you still have to pay them off.
Right. I mean, that to me wasn't necessarily a bad decision. It was a decision that was never going to pay off because.
Yeah, but see, you hire other staff. Now you're hiring two sets of staff.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is it wasn't just that. I mean, it just, for people that want results immediately, the vision, bringing a guy in like that and what he wanted to do was going to take. What, 10 years? That just was never going to – that was never going to fly. That was never going to fly with Vergara, unfortunately. But, you know, and now the fact, you know, that they probably didn't have the money to pay for it probably was another, you know, indicator that it wasn't necessarily going to last particularly long.
Even with Almeida, he has about a year or maybe 2 years left of, and that's, you know, they have to pay him. They have to pay him. They're going to have sending him his checks.
Well, you know what we need to do then? We need to ban all the Cantineros, especially the Chivermanos have to pay double. You know, you'll get a bigger stake because you are Chivermanos, and we buy the team. We take it over.
And you know what, John? Even when the De La Torres had returned, because Vergara was desperate at that point.
He was so desperate he wanted to bring the De La Torres back.
Well, I mean, that's the last time the team had consistency and success. He wanted to go back to what had worked. And they had signed all these contracts.
And who fired De La Torres?
It was Higuera. He said, and you know, both of them still had about 2 years left.
How much of that is just like bad blood, you know, just by from living in Guadalajara?
No, I think it was because they didn't acknowledge him. So Higuera is the CEO of OmniLife, but then he's starting to like, he always wanted to be in soccer. He always wanted to be involved and own a club. So then he's sending these emails to Nestor and to Chepo and telling them, I think you should move this player here or this player needs to be traded. He even made a few deals during the draft, Mercado de Piernas. So it's kind of funny seeing it because Medio Tiempo, you know, they do like a live feed of the transfers.
Right.
And you saw a couple of Chivas, like Fierro was the main one. He's like, oh, he's been sold or loaned to Querétaro. And then like an hour later, no, he's staying at Chivas. And that was Nestor, you know, picking up the phone and being like, hey, I didn't sign on this. Send them back. And that was part of it, you know. That was, I think, the main thing where yet I was like, well, you know what? I'm getting rid of both of you guys.
And now he's gotten rid of the coach that he brought in.
You know, and I want to make a – because what opened the doors for Almeida, and then Almeida did come in a, I would say, unprofessional way. It's like the unspoken coaching stuff, unspoken coach's rule. You don't sign on to a team while coach is still working.
Right.
Even Sampaoli said it because they tried to hire him. He got under the bus there. But if we saw one thing was that a lot of times Almeida mostly gave credit to Vergara. He rarely spoke highly of Higuera. So I think that was another of their falling out.
So once again, Chivas fans are going to have to, you know, just when they started, you know, buying a bunch of players and they got a good, you know, they got this fancy coach with his fancy hair and, you know, they had a real good run. I mean, I've seen Chivas fans call Almeida the best coach in Chivas history.
They're young fans, John. They don't forgive them for they don't know what they speak of.
Yeah. Youth is wasted on the young.
It is. I mean, again, it's the whole winning Copa MX, and it's great to win that tournament, but that's a tournament where some of the top Mexican teams weren't playing, right, where they weren't taking it serious. And then we went CONCACAF, which is what we played, like, what, four games, maybe five?
It was six. It was six.
Against some teams that are like...
No, I think it was eight. I think it was eight games, actually.
Yeah, but nothing to dial at home about, you know, and to make it seem like all of a sudden Chivas is world beaters, you know, where it matters, I say it's in the league. And you were saying the record, it's pretty bad. Almeida's record in league has never been that good.
Okay, so is this setting up a prime opportunity for Almeida to take the national team?
I don't know, man. 6 months is a long time. I mean, I heard they're not hiring anyone until like January.
So that means that Guero Real is definitely coming.
That means Piojo has another shot at it.
There's a game in November on a friendly.
Yeah, but they'll truck out like Mora to coach that as a you know, they have games in October too, if I'm not mistaken, because they're playing in Houston before they play the U.S. in Nashville. It just seems like the you know, for Chivas fans, it's unfortunate, but I think, you know, for Chivas fans, especially, as Jorge said, some of the younger, newer flock, the message here from our resident, our senior Chiva hermano, is this is normal, so get used to it. Is that correct, Joel?
I'm sorry, can you repeat it? I had a little incident.
Oh, yes. Did you spill your chimay, Joel?
Something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll keep it.
No.
Keep it on the DL. No, the question, you know, for the young Chivas fan listener right now, that's hoping that you would, you know, talk him down from the ledge. Is the message here, boys? This is Chivas. Get used to it.
It is. You said it before that there's the 10-year Chiva comet. That's pretty much after the Campeonísimo era. That's been the wait between campeonatos. It's one every 10 years. And it's the way the team is going. It doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon.
I like to think of it as a 1 in 20.
1 in 20? but it could be. But
sorry.
It's 1 in 10. It could be 1 in 20 now. But I mean, there's no money. As much as like, it sucks to see that coach go. It makes sense for some, you know, it makes sense to release him, because I don't think he was on board with the project, and the project being to work with youth. They had been announcing it like, we don't have money. We're gonna start promoting the cantera and.
Are they actually shelling out to get rid of him though?
Yeah, they had to pay him off, like come to an agreement.
So it's not really a release. It's more like,
oh, they fired his ass.
They fired him, yeah. And they're paying out a
they're buying out his contract. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But you know, last season, Chivas got two young players from Santos. You know, some foreshadowing there. They were talking about, this is the route we're going. And I think, what was it, Ronald? And I forget the other guy. He's a midfielder.
Gael Sandoval.
Yes. And he didn't really play them that much. You know, and he has a couple other young players. He wasn't really playing them. And it's like, that's where the team is going. And Almeida just wanted, you know, he was expecting the Chivas, where the club was, you know, dropping money to bring in the more promising top players. That just wasn't going to happen.
So once again, what we're going to see at the Club World Cup is going to be a team that's decimated from the one that had, you know, for the reason as to why they got to the Club World Cup in the first place. So you're going to see, you know, Chivas with, you know, at this point, it's going to be a coach from the Montón. It's going to be, who pick somebody, Raul Arias, you know, is Ruben Omar Romano available? Because
well, it's in December, John. I mean, we got.
I was going to suggest El Travieso, man, because I'm still a fan.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's had much
his
experience
phone
working with kids.
You know who also is a fan of Travieso is John.
Me?
Yes, of Travieso Guzmán. He gave him a really good memory at the Olimpico. Hugo was on the other side.
Hey, I got Rigo on the line, on the phone lines. His app was crashing.
Oh, Rigo's with us. I was hoping that.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
What's going on, Rigo? Are you okay? Did you have to put the sharp objects away, Rigo?
It's been a very emotional day.
Rigo, what's going to happen to you if they sell La Chofis?
Hermano Red Bull.
Happen. because I felt like La Chofis was Almeida's, you know, project. And, you know, another coach might not, you know, put up with him. He's over there in the hot tubs with naked chicks.
Isn't that part of the trophy's charm, though?
I'm trying to figure out where that's wrong.
You were in a hot tub with trophies. Wouldn't you be shirtless? I would.
I mean, who honestly wears a shirt into the hot tub?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Absolutely.
No, I'm going to be upset if trophies do that. I'm seeing, I mean, I don't know. Like, it hasn't been like official yet. I mean, I'm hoping that everything the players are doing is going to make La Vida Activa, you know, leave him on for at least to the Club World Cup.
Well, I thought that that Almeida, even on his own personal account, said, "Hey, thank you. I'm out of here. It's been great. It's been fun."
He's going to release a statement later on about what's going on. But he said, he's like, "Thank you for all the support." It wasn't like, "Hey, I'm, you know, officially no longer the coach."
It's not a, "I'm out, bitches. Y'all have fun."
Yeah. I think it was more so like, "I'm going to clear things up," or "I'm going to," I don't know. I mean, the writing was on the wall the moment they hired Zanda. I just thought they would at least let him coach to the Club World Cup. I mean, he had done everything he had done to that point. He deserved that at least.
Do we know what promoter Leanda's in bed with? Because you know he's in bed with one of them. Or...
I think he's in bed with Higuera. To me, Higuera is the root of the problems. I just think that he, when Almeida had, you know, he was the sporting director, I think he felt that he had too much control. And I don't think he liked that. I think they want a coach that they can control. And I think Almeida had gotten too big for them because of his success.
He was too good, and they had too much success.
Yeah.
Boys, our coach is getting too good. He's winning too many things. We need to control him. So let's fire him.
I mean, like, I was talking about the Ronaldo acquisition. I've heard that Almeida didn't want Ronaldo. Almeida didn't want Ronaldo, and he didn't want to get rid of...
And, of course, you're talking about Cristiano Ronaldo, right?
Yeah, Cristiano.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was all forced on him. And I think it was Higuera trying to impose his, you know, his will. I mean, and that's the issue when you have your GM or, you know, finance director or whatever. It's not on the same page as the coach.
Rigo, but that, Almeida knew because he signed on to that. So, I mean, he knew what was he up against. And I think from day one, Higuera would always bring the players that he wanted, not the players Almeida wanted. So that was like one thing that it's sort of like that was the deal he got and he took it.
Yeah, but I mean, it gets to the point where you're not winning because of you don't have enough talent, then there's the issue. So if Higuera's bringing in, because I mean, the other day when Deanda was on Fútbol Picante, he was throwing some subs at Higuera about Willy Peña spending $8 million on a player that wasn't worth it. So I mean,
that cried when he left.
Well, I mean,
it's hilarious to me. Like he has a heart injury.
You know what? He was a national team caliber player. He was the team's leading goal scorer that first tournament he played with Chivas.
Yeah, but there was like 5 of those goals were by PK. Come on.
Still, man, he was still putting them in. You
could tell that he could not keep up with the pace of the team. He slowed the team down.
Yeah, he's. And that
missed PK against America in the playoffs was just like the nail in the coffin for him in Chivas, or with Almeida at least.
Yeah, he was partying a lot, so they said that Almeida was just fed up with he would show up drunk to the training, which is what got him kicked out of Cruz Azul, where I don't know if it was before or after one of the training sessions, he went for a six, and that, you know, they showed him the door, man. he's like my friend's playing Cascarita.
And I mean, if you're the coach and you ask for certain players and they don't bring them and they bring other players that you didn't even ask for, I mean, that's frustrating. But I still think Almeida wanted to stay. Now, the whole other thing with there's rumors that he hasn't gotten paid for his bonuses. He's paying for the players' bonuses out of his pocket. I mean, it's all other.
I do think he will get paid, though, because, I mean, I do think the league.
I mean, if he's getting fired, he's getting paid, right?
Yeah, he will get paid. Ultimately, they do. They do have to pay you. That's one thing that the league has ensured. You might get paid late, but you're going to get your money. But I think part of the reason he stayed longer is they were giving him a lot of money. And then other clubs couldn't afford, they couldn't buy out his contract or couldn't pay him what Chivas was paying him.
Maybe that's part of the reason why they're having financial issues, because they were shelling out buku bucks for him. The reported transfer fees that were supposedly paid out for certain players, et cetera, put them in financial duress.
Can you say, though, they overpaid for him, though? I mean, he got him a championship, and he got him a couple of...
Who, Pulido and Pizarro?
He filled in the trophy case a little.
I'm talking about Almeida. Like, yeah, the players, I do think they overpaid, like, especially Pulido and Gulli. Yeah, I think those two have been bad signings.
So Pulido's not worth $18 million?
Pulido one has been a bad signing, to be honest.
Well, Pulido did score a couple of goals in the final. So, but overall, so my question to y'all before we move on to other topics is who comes in? Who is Rigo? Who is your ideal coach? And then who do you think is going to come in?
My ideal coach after Almeida would be Pep Guardiola. It's not who's going to come in. It's probably going to be some rinky-dink Mexican manager. I think Mexican managers have a very low ceiling. And not that Chivas is, you know, undeserving of that right now, but that's not what I envision for the club at this point. So it'll probably be like, Busetich.
That's rinky dink.
What?
He's calling the King Midas rinky dink coach.
Yeah, that's rough, man.
One of the most winningest coaches in Liga MX.
He's Mexican, though. He's Mexican.
Almeida doesn't come nowhere near Busetich, man.
Mexico's rinky dink.
Almeida brought up River Plate. What
are you guys talking about? But River Plate booted him halfway through the season when they brought him up.
Mexico. He doesn't even coach out of Mexico.
Yeah, but bringing up a team like River Plate, you know, that's like saying brought up Juventus back to Serie A. I mean, that's like the probably like the top two more financially stable teams in Argentina. I mean,
World Two.
Anyone could bring River Plate, man. That was
River Plate was going broke too.
Yeah, but even if they're going broke in Argentina, that just means you're less broke than the other.
There's too much Mexican hate and praise for the almighty Argentinians and Europeans.
It's true, Chiqui, bro.
I think a decent choice would be Rafael Puente Jr.
But he just got hired.
Oh, did he? I didn't realize that.
Querétaro, was it?
Yes. I agree with you, Dan. I would have liked him, too.
Because, I mean, he does play at least style. So, I mean, if you're going to lose, at least you're going to lose in an entertaining fashion as opposed to just...
And he's been at Chivas.
Well, that's a bummer, man. You guys dropped the ball on that one. Because I think that's a young, promising coach that would make sense.
He was his GM, though. We had him as GM.
Who was saying that Julio Davino is the GM for Monterrey, right?
What about Jurgen?
What's his name?
Jurgen.
Yeah.
Or Dam. He's into coaching now.
No. Jurgen Klinsmann, or Bruce Arena. They're both available.
I'll pass on those guys too. Tomas Boyd.
So what?
Especially Bruce Arena. I mean, does he have any kind of track record working with kids? Because I mean, that's basically what they're going to be working with is journeymen and prospects.
La Volpe would be good if you're trying to play with a bunch of youth and you give them 2 years to build that team. But who knows, man, after the whole Podóloga stuff.
You just said that they got rid of the massage therapist, so you guys are good in that end.
What if Jurgen uncovers some Mexican German talent in the Bundesliga? You guys are thinking about it.
I can't imagine there's too many of that over there. But he's going to uncover who? Hey, Marco Fabian and Salcedo?
That's right. So is it official that Almeida's gone, or is it like nothing has been determined?
I mean, we're hanging out by like a fingernail.
So it's going to happen. They'll make it official.
Tomorrow.
Okay. Well, see, I thought it was official.
It's official overnight while we're sleeping, so it's not a big deal.
You mean like when Chepa was fired at 1:30 in the morning after the Honduras game, after the Aztecaso? Man, that was such a bizarre hex, because they would release lists for like call ups like after midnight in some cases. It was very, very, very strange. So I'm assuming that there'll be no De La Torres, no Güero Real. So it's gonna be.
You know what, John? I do think he's fired because he changed the date, like the vacation when they were supposed to return. It was supposed to be on the 10th, I think.
Yeah, it's gonna be next week.
And now they changed it, and I think a big reason for that is if you're going to bring someone new to start working, they're going to need a bit more time with the club, with the players.
Yeah, well, it's a sad day for Chivas fans, but as Joel has pointed out repeatedly on the show, not anything that should come as a surprise or a shock to any Chivas fan, because this has been their modus operandi for about the last 30 years or so. So if you're new to Chivas, buckle up and get used to it, because this is what the ride is like, and then enjoy your little championship every 10 years or so.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay, let's move on. Let's switch gears. You know, again, this was supposed to be a nice kind of a slow news day show. We're going to talk a little about the Mexico World Cup. They were abanderados today, whatever that means. I'm not sure exactly what happens when you are abanderado. Do they wrap you in a flag like a taco? Is that what abanderado means? Or I'm not sure exactly what that is. We'll talk about that. They're friendly, which we had eyes on the friendly there in the Rose Bowl, albeit eyes that showed up a little. Joel, it's time for you to, Joel, for you to come clean. Let us know why it was that you and Profe showed up not on time at the game.
It's overconfidence from Profe Cambia Rayas, man. And I miss my tradition of
making the game on time?
No, of getting a pre-game meal and showing you guys what I'm eating.
Sort of
in-your-face type of tweet, you know?
Right. Well, trust me, that food is not an in-your-face type of food.
Well, the Rose Bowl has been. It hasn't let me down, John.
That is true, because I've been to a couple, I mean, not soccer games, but I've been to football games there. At the actual Rose Bowl, a couple of times. And the media meal is now they put it out. Do they do the tent outside for soccer like they do for that, or is that?
They put like I forgot what it's called. Looks like a buffet. You know, you get your plate and you load up all the stuff.
But is that up in the press box, or is it downstairs in the tent?
It's on the press box, man. You just
get your food. For the Rose Bowl, they have the big tent outside, and you go down there and you have a nice, relaxing.
No, this was in the Rose Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Right, so you guys were so why were you late? What happened? I mean, I know, and I don't even live in Los Angeles. That if you have to go to, I mean, even on non parade days, you have to leave at least 4 hours just because of the traffic.
I don't know, man. As Profe told me, he said 4:30, and I said that's cutting it too close, man. But I don't know. I think he needed to do his chores before.
I mean, you're in Orange County, which is like with no traffic, it's at least an hour just to get to Pasadena. And that's with no traffic.
Yeah, no, but I was in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
I was in LA and we made plans with Profe to carpool. And yeah.
Well, see, that's the lesson here, Joel, is don't carpool with a camaraya.
We didn't just miss food, John. We had been invited to hang out at a tailgate.
Oh yeah, what tailgate was that?
For who? Man, you guys suck on a ridiculous level.
It did, man. It's
you guys
the
wasted
new
a perfectly good opportunity for a really good time.
Yeah. Yeah, we did, man.
Shame on you guys.
It was the Passion crew. The former PBA guys, they did their own.
Oh, Passion 1927.
Yeah. There's a couple popping up, which is good, you know, the more the merrier. So I think this was their first rodeo as their new name, and they were like, hey, come check us out. They even got on Fusion, man. They even got on TV.
So double, so you could have been there and put out the Cantina MX.
We could have, yes.
Well, you're gonna have to take your punishment, so
thank you, sir, man. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
For shame. For shame, Joel. Even Hugo.
Me estoy avergonzado.
I mean, really.
You know what? When I went to the Rose Bowl, John?
Oh, yeah.
From
yes,
San Diego.
Yes.
From San Diego.
Right.
I made it in time to stop in West Covina and have a beer with a friend of the show, loyal listener, Sergio.
And you still made it to the game on time. Did you even get to tailgate a little bit, Dan?
I did a little. I shot some poor video of people partying it up. I wasn't invited to any particular tailgate, but I would have had time.
Right.
Yeah.
Just
got to plan ahead, man.
Yeah. I mean, I've had to go to the Rose Bowl like after the Tournament of Roses, and they're where they close all the streets down. And you have to, as Dan says, you have to plan ahead. So again, Joel, next time at the Rose Bowl, man, just ditch Cambia Raya, man, because you know with a name like Cambia Raya, I mean, he just can't be trusted because you don't know what Raya he's gonna be wearing.
You know what? He stood me up in San Diego.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I saw his name there, Soccer Chronicle.
At this point, I don't know who's worse, Higuera or Profe Cambaray.
I said on.
All right, so the game was Mexico-Wales. It was at the Rose Bowl. And they picked an interesting time to play the game because it was right when the stadium was half shadow, half sunlight. So I'm sure the video guys were having a field day having to paint that shot every time, and then I don't know if y'all noticed, but there were like lens flares in the images when they were on the game camera. So
it kind of reminded me of Toluca.
Yeah,
that high noon game, because like the shadow's always present on the field.
Yeah, it was. And then at least for the first. I mean, I personally like that stuff because that way, you know, the really talented guys can really make that work to their advantage. But the game ends 0-0, and you know, it was so funny to me to watch the Mexican press talk about that, and then watch the press that's based here talk about it, and it was as if you watched two completely different games. It's just fascinating. I mean, now, Joel, you were in the press. Dan, did you say you went to the game, or you've just been to the Rose Bowl previously?
Oh, just previously. I think it was during the Gold Cup last time I went. But no, I just watched it on TV.
Okay, so Joel, you were there, and then you heard the coach at the press conference. What was the general consensus of the cologne laden press box?
Oh man, I didn't do press box, John, and I rarely go down there.
Go for then.
It's too far. What?
No, not the press conference. The press box.
Like you're inside. Talking about the coach.
No, I'm talking about just the overall.
Where you watched the game?
Yeah, the banter in the press box, because there's always plenty of banter in the press boxes there.
There wasn't really much, at least where I was at. They saw Soccer Chronicle and they threw us on the south side of the press box, John. No, it was pretty cordial, man. I think a lot of people knew it's a Molero, and they see it as it was just like a glorified training match.
Right.
I think there was fans that were upset, but I'm like, it's been going on for like 20 years now. What are you expecting, you know? Just because you paid $300 for VIP seats doesn't mean you're going to get a Champions League final tier game, you know?
Exactly. But the overall, did you make it to the stadium in time to watch the game in its entirety, or did you catch like come in like 30 to 40 minutes after the first half started?
No, I got there just as it had begun.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, I missed the list of like, you know, like the list with who's the numbers and all that.
Sure.
Yeah, made it hard to live tweet.
So who, you know, I guess what I find interesting is, you know, there's a huge faction in the Mexican press, particularly, that seemed to think that Mexico had to play like Brazil 1970 in this match, and the fact that they didn't, you know, that, you know, they were ready to just go ahead and fire the coach and bring in somebody just for the World Cup was the general consensus of at least the reactions and the coverage that I saw. From again, this is from the press in Mexico, and you know, I watched that game, and I frankly didn't see that at all. I mean, I saw a team that, you know, they said, you know, the phrase that I heard the most was "No saben a qué juegan, no juegan a nada," was what I heard, and it seemed like Mexico. You know, when I think of a team that can no juega nada, I think of the Chepo teams in the Hex when they're playing home games, and for World Cup qualifiers, and they don't even get a shot off on goal. That to me is a team can no juega nada. This team got plenty of shots on goal, and they generated plenty of offense, so I don't understand what they meant by no juegan a nada. So Rigo, you're a Osorio hater. Maybe you can explain that to me.
There just seems to be a lack of cohesion. I mean, it goes back to, you know, obviously he's always tinkering with the lineups, but like Cheech did nothing up top. He never got a ball. There was some shots, and they had opportunities. I think a lot of it was in individuality, like it's always been. Tecatito, Herrera. I've been critical of Herrera recently, and I thought he played very well in the game. But in the first half, it was only him in the midfield. And then he took him out, and then Gutierrez finally showed up. And Tecatito was doing, you know, his, it seemed like he's finally getting back to that old Tecatito that we all know. But there wasn't, I didn't see any cohesion from the team. The back line is still, you know, an area of concern.
Well, the back line is going to be a disaster. I mean, period, end of story. There's, to me, the saving grace of the back line, you know, with if there's any kind of silver lining to Nestor Araujo's injury is the fact that maybe now we'll see Salcedo play as a central defender as opposed to on the wing, because even with Edson Álvarez coming in, and I personally think if there's anyone who has a number that's higher than 23 on the back of their jersey, to me the guy that has the best chance of making the team is going to be Edson Álvarez, because you know, as a wingback, I know that Rigo, one of your biggest complaints with the Mexican wingbacks, at least under Osorio, is that they don't join the offense when they need to, because they're just not used to doing that because they're all central defenders. But Edson does that, and he actually does it pretty well, and he actually has a lot of, you know, he's a little bit more technical than one would expect a big, you know, lumbering, goofy looking 6-footer to play like. So I think that because of that, I think that he does have some options. There, but you know, as far as cohesion though, I mean, I saw a team, that was stringing passes better than they had. You know, they were trying things, which, again, I'm a big fan of, because you know, if you don't try it, you know, it's not. You know, how do you know? And but you're right though. I think the defense again is, you know, when you're going up against, you know, they do that high pressure thing, and you know, there's one bad pass and it's grab the rosaries, because who knows what's going to happen. And we're going to see that repeat.
Yeah, there was a bad pass from Alanis that almost turned into a Wales goal had it not been for the Molina, the one that returned back.
Right.
It's just like that kind of stuff is just, I wouldn't take Alanis to the World Cup.
Yeah, well, he is wearing number 2. And,
he doesn't have any left-footers. So I don't know.
From what I've gathered, I think that that Moreno's supposed to be back and healthy. I'm not so sure about Diego Reyes, if he's going to be back and healthy or not. So, but again, it seems like, and I think even Osorio mentioned it in the post-game press conference, that he's waiting on his injured guys. So basically the guys that have the jersey numbers, you know, 24 and up are the ones that are in trouble. So that it's an Alanis is to lose. And if you were basing your decision based just on that game, then Rodrigo, would you say that Alanis lost his spot? He'll be wearing jersey 25 in the next game.
Alfredo, he brought him in for Alanis, and he brought him in at that left center back position.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on that, because I thought Ayala was more solid than Alanis was. So I would think that he lost it, but I mean, he's been a big fan of Alanis during his whole tenure. So I don't know. It's just, I mean, it's just so weird. Like it doesn't really matter the performances sometimes with him, because he's just a fan of guys. Like, I'm almost positive he's going to take Gio.
Oh, there's no question he's taking Johnny.
He's a tactician, man. He looks at the players he has and the opponents he's going up against and matches everything up. I thought actually Mexico played really well. They had good possession. Chicharito, like you said, wasn't really into the game. At times I saw him come back and try to help bring up the ball, and you know, he screwed up a few times and almost lost possession a few times. But I think the wingers
have to drop all the way down because he's not getting the ball.
Well, yeah, it's because the wingers would cut in instead of center. So
the wingers were doing a great job, but the way they were playing, it was sort of not lending to Chicharito getting the ball. I remember a corner kick he had a good opportunity to head it, but that whole game was played to where Chicharito
blocked it.
Yeah, I think so. It seemed like a game where Chicharito was just going to be a target guy, just stick there and wait for a header or wait for something. You're not going to be really part of the game because Tecatito and Aquino were doing so well. And I thought Gutierrez, when, like you said, when he came in,
well, he played the whole game.
Towards the second half, he was playing really well.
Yeah.
The cohesion was good.
When Herrera stepped out, he showed up.
Yeah.
Instead of putting passes together.
Yeah, well, one thing I did notice, and I don't know if they were doing, I mean, I'm sure they were doing it, is Herrera was was playing a lot on the left, at least in the first 20 minutes or so, just to give Tecatito an ISO so that he would be left, you know, one-on-one with his defender. And that defender, if I'm not mistaken, I believe is the starting left back for Tottenham. I forget what the gentleman's name is. And he took him to school pretty much the entire first half. However, Tecatito did not have the gas to play the second half. So that tells me that he is only good for about 45 minutes. So I fully expect him to start World Cup games on the bench and then be the first sub in the second half.
Which I wouldn't mind that at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it either.
Might spark.
Yeah, because you have about four players that you probably would want to start, and there's only room for three.
Right.
So you have Raul, you have Chich, you have Vela, you have Chucky. I mean, you have quite a few players there. So,
does Jimenez get the start then in Scotland? And if he does play well, should he get the start against the Germans, or is that just a slap in the face of the Germans saying, "Do you not even want to start Chicharito against us"?
I think you have to go with Raul. I think he's been more clutch. He's been had the better season. I think he's just the better informed striker right now. All things being equal, I think give the edge to Raul. He's just as versatile, if not even probably more so, as far as like being playing out wide and being able to switch back and forth. I think he's able to do that better also.
He's a better technical player. He has more of a repertoire. He can do
more of a complete striker, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
More of a complete player.
I can see him playing Vela, Jimenez, and Chich in that first game. Just because those guys, like Vela and Raul, have like can play with their bodies.
They do. That's something that will, I guess, as the game.
And as far as the friendly goes, though, I personally was not disappointed with how the team played. I think on a different night, you probably walk away with a 2-0 win. They had plenty of opportunities to put in at least two goals, I thought. I thought Uribe missed a clear one. Aquino, I knew, would miss his.
Herrera missed the one-on-one, which you cannot do that.
Giovanni had a chance as well.
Giovanni also had his. Well, although his was a bit of a tougher shot because it was going to his weak foot.
Yeah. How can
and
you
he's
know?
A super lefty.
Well, I will say this about Giovanni. Is it even, and then this to me, if it's between Giovanni and Jürgen Damm, which is what it looks like, I mean, it's Giovanni every time. I mean, I'm sorry, but it just is. You know, I'm not
a Jürgen Damm fan, but the argument I would make for him is that he can play right back. And we don't have right backs because he has the speed and he's lanky.
Yeah, but he's the dude weigh he's like a little like a little waif superman. He weighs like 80 pounds.
But I mean, that's the only argument I would make to take him over Gio. Because there's so many guys for Gio's position.
True, but I mean, if you need someone to come in and put in a spark, are you going to put in Jürgen Damm or are you going to put in Giovanni?
Or if you're trying to come from behind and you need extra firepower, or if you're going to sacrifice someone more of that's more defensive oriented, then you're going to want to have someone like him. Because I think he's awesome if you're playing counterattacking. I think he's awesome if you allow him to just play and roam around. He's still, I mean, the second he got in, he put in a couple of really good crosses.
He still sees the field better than just about anybody, at least offensively.
I thought the criticism, he
plays no defense. So
I thought the criticisms for him, though, were really just over the top. I'm like, I don't see how you're going to single that guy out of everybody and point to him as saying playing subpar. I'm like, no, man, I think he played... He didn't look out of place, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's it was. But you know, a lot of folks that already have already made up their minds. Oh, you know, well, Giovanni's gonna have a bad game, so let's just go ahead. And, But that's the whole point, though, Dan, is it seemed like they were just trashing the team because they just wanted to trash the team. It was as if they didn't watch the game. I mean, I don't know how many times I saw, I mean, even on Univision and Telemundo, like, alarmas en el tri por el mal desempeño en el amistoso contra Gales. I was thinking, mal desempeño.
It's clickbait, though. It is, because you if you're even remotely logical in your analysis, you're going to see how many players are missing, how many the team has just literally gotten together. They've only been practicing for a couple of days. It's and there's players that are literally that he's putting in testing because of the injury situation. So I don't know why you're going to criticize the rotations at this point. I'm like, one, he's already been doing it. But in this case, it kind of makes sense too, because you legitimately have question marks in your defensive line. You likely have Reyes, who's probably not going to be healthy. And you already have Nestor, who's already out. So you have a super old Rafa. You have Moreno. I didn't think it was the performance was bad at all. And I thought, considering the circumstances, this is I think a good friendly. They didn't score. Which is obviously, you know, that's not what you want, but it's just a friendly, you know. As long if they're able to create five or six scoring opportunities at the World Cup, that should be enough to get them some wins.
You know, and it wasn't as if, you know, Wales was like, you know, they did have a couple of young players, but they had that was mostly Wales' starting lineup that played the World Cup qualifiers and got to the they got to the semis, didn't they, in the Eurocopa.
Not sure, but they went far. Yeah, I'm not sure how. I didn't follow, but they're part of, I think, to create the narrative. They're saying that the team is not the same without Gareth Bale, which is, I mean, okay, true, but doesn't mean the team is trash.
You know, that's like saying that Pumas is just not the same without Picolín. So I understand.
I think Mexico needs more than five shots on goal to score. I think they had plenty more than that, and they didn't score. And I think this game, if there is anything negative to say, just shows what Mexico has always shown, is that they can't beat a well-organized defense or a bunker, if you want to call it that. Because many times during the game, they were well-established.
Yes and no, but the difference is that usually Mexico can't even get shots off against teams like that.
Yeah. So in that aspect, they did do well. But say Korea has a good organized defense.
They don't.
Then that'll be good. But if they did, and if they bunkered with their speed, I imagine, a good chance Korea could, on the counter, end up beating Mexico, and Mexico outshoot Korea, for example. Just in typical Mexican style, possessing, attacking, not being able to beat the bunker, and then getting countered.
Well, Mexico is rounding well into their World Cup form. I remember, was it the 2010 World Cup where Mexico played, I think, England, and they played some really good friendlies before, and they would just dominate the games possession wise and get, you know, decent shots. They could hit anything. So I'm glad to see that Mexico's is getting into their proper World Cup form by doing what they're doing with the way that they are getting ready to play. So what is the deal then with the Mexican press when it comes to Osorio? I mean, they have been on his ass literally since the minute his first press conference was done. And I firmly believe that if Osorio was from Argentina or from Brazil, that they would be talking about the rotaciones as it was the greatest thing in the world. But because he's from Colombia, then it's like, you know, who is this guy? I mean, I was watching like Russo Brailovsky and Garcia, but they're like acting like dumbfounded. I don't know what this guy is going to do next. It's crazy. And frankly, it just cracks me up.
It's silly because and that's the thing. He's not even rotating players that much. We know who's going to be playing for the most part. There's a couple of question marks, sure, but I mean, the ones that we think are going to be playing in certain positions, I mean, the only real question marks are in was it defensive midfielder and the fullbacks and the center backs right now, only because of the injuries. If it wasn't for them, it chances are it'd be Araujo and Moreno starting, no question. You have Layún that's going to be playing on the left probably, and probably Salcedo playing on the right. That's how it would normally be. Now it's a bit of a mix up, but they're just doing it just to continue the same stupid little thing that they've been doing, because why are they going to change their tune now? I'm actually feeling more confident, more positive about the team's chances. I mean, sure, I think there's a gigantic possibility that they could just crash and burn, but I think this team has the potential to surprise some folks.
Well, you know, we were talking about before we came on the air, the Sports Illustrated magazine that had Mexico on their cover, on one of their four World Cup covers for their this week's edition, and they actually have Mexico making the quarterfinals, but losing to Belgium in the quarterfinal. Who obviously, you know, the person, I think it was Grant Wall who put his bracket together for that, obviously does not understand Mexico World Cup history with Belgium. We own the Belgians in the World Cup. We've beaten them twice and have and then we had that draw in 1990, and frankly should have won the game were it not for a certain player from Monterrey who unfortunately became famous for doing 98% of the job but missing out on that last 2% and not scoring the goals.
Who do you have Mexico beating in the
round of 16? He had Mexico beating Brazil.
Oh.
Yeah, so they had so that's Mexico to the quarterfinals, according to I believe it was Grant Wall who did his World Cup. I haven't had a chance to read the magazine. I'll let y'all
know. That would be a bit bittersweet, though, right? To get past Brazil
and then lose.
It's like, congratulations, we got the quinto partido, but this still feels like a bit of a letdown. I personally would feel that way, because I am not impressed with that team. Haven't been. I don't care what the ranking is.
Brazil?
No, Belgium. That's just not a team I'm impressed with.
Yeah, they are underperformers when it comes to international tournaments.
I mean, I know they got some really good players and all, but even during the friendly, it's just like, this is exactly what I was expecting. I'm like, yeah, they have some good players, but definitely beatable. They don't make my legs shake like Argentina does, or Germany.
Right. So Mexico plays Scotland coming up at the Azteca, which apparently has been reduced to a capacity of 72,000. And frankly, that upsets me. That stadium should be, you know, at the very least 90. What has happened to the Estadio Azteca that they've reduced it to 72,000 seats? Anyway, well, that's a discussion for another day. So, are we then to see if like Guardado and Moreno and all these guys are going to come back? Because apparently the one that they're most worried about now is Guardado. So if Guardado does not make it, then obviously, would it be Gutierrez that would come in for him? And if it is, it seems like that might be okay.
I personally wasn't all that impressed with Gutierrez. I think he plays a little bit slow.
I wasn't impressed with him either.
But if it were up to me and you had to replace Guardado, I would roll the dice with Marco. I think he's got a great engine. He's been he knows. I think he's used to high tempo, high intensity, he runs a lot when he plays. I think somebody like that, I think he'd be really a great substitute for Guardado.
Well, I would assume that he would be the substitute for Guardado, and then Gutierrez would be his substitute.
I think it's going to be Vela. He's played him a lot.
Man, that's scary, man.
I think he plays him, but he plays him there or in that or with two midfielders behind him.
Well, Vela is a straight up 10 for LAFC, is he not?
Yeah.
I mean, because he's pretty much all over the field.
And Osorio has played him there a few times in the last couple games. So that's why I could see that happening. And when he does play him there, the team functions pretty well. So I wouldn't mind that.
You know, if that did happen, I would much rather have, you know, Vela did play that position, but then the midfielders have to be more defensive oriented. At least a Molina for sure. And Herrera, but Herrera, how he's gotten better about it, about playing defense. But by the way, I think that Hector Herrera seems to, whatever it was that he lost at midseason, he seems to have found it, and he couldn't have picked a better time to get going again, because he seems like he's doing that. He's rounding in the World Cup form, and he had a fantastic World Cup, the last one.
That's what I'm saying, John. Think about it. If you consider Herrera, if he comes in hot, Tecatito, Vela, Chucky, man, that's potential, man, for a lot of offense.
Well, what it boils down to for Mexico is, I mean, especially in the later, and this I think was going to kill them in the later rounds, is that they can outscore people, you know. But Korea is going to score some goals on Mexico. It's so sweet, but I think Mexico has the potential to score more. So they do have a lot of firepower. So Mexico fans should expect Mexico to should understand that Mexico is going to have to outscore people at least in the Korean Sweden game to advance. And if they, you know, the kind of like they did in 98. So it's there is a lot of potential there, and not just in the starting 11. You know, people coming off the bench too. I mean, you can take that team in many different directions, just with who you have on the bench, which is, again, one of the reasons why I think that we've seen this whole rotaciones thing, because I think that it's going to be situational in the World Cup. It's not going to be – it's going to throw Carlos Vela out to play, you know, this position, just because I think it's at some point he might play that position for a certain period of time. But I think most players will end up in their natural positions when the games do get going. So does Salcedo move to central defender then? If Reyes, obviously now Araujo, because he would have. I mean, he is Mexico's second best defender, right? I mean, you would have to make that sacrifice.
I would agree, because just the thought of Hugo Ayala or Alanis is just not all that. It's much less comforting. And then you think about who can play, because by moving him, you know, then you start have to you really have to start shifting players around to fill those slots. So who would play in the right back position?
Well, I would start Edson Álvarez.
Yeah, that would be my choice. But who knows? He's wacky. He might throw out Layún on the right and then throw Alanis on the left.
Stop.
I'm just saying, like, this is something that he could do.
The only thing with not having Hugo Ayala is...
And then Rafa. Defenders.
You're losing your offense on the corners for headers. Salcedo doesn't do that. I don't think anyone else does that better than...
Yeah, but Edson Álvarez is 6 feet tall, so to me...
I don't think he can head. Not as good as Ayala. Ayala's probably better than any...
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I'll tell you what. Then I think that the fact that he has some defensive issues, I think pretty much guarantees that not only is Molina going to go to the World Cup, he's probably going to start a few games.
I'm thinking it's either going to be Molina or Rafa playing in that position. And I'm thinking Rafa, actually. I'm
thinking Molina.
I'm hoping that he goes. If he does goes the Rafa route, that he's plays it extra conservative in the back, and then just just to make sure there's always protection behind him. And then just you know, I know players, I know like as fans, we don't like it a lot, but and then just depend on the individual talent. Hope that maybe Rafa can get you a couple of long passes that could create a goal, or work for set pieces to get, because you're going to have a lot of good players that can get in goals with, you know, up and down the team, they can all put in goals on set pieces, so, and just try your luck that way. But yeah, I'm more convinced now that Rafa's going to be starting against Germany.
Eek. He's going to be
He didn't start against them the last time.
Man, that's Ricardo Osorio of 2010.
I don't know, man. I trust Rafa, dude. Like, I've never seen the team get their ass kicked once with a serious beatdown like that with him on the field. So I don't.
In the two signature beatdowns of the Osorio era, Rafa was not on the field for either of them.
He came off the bench. I think
he came off the bench for Germany. Yeah, that was it. But that was when it was already 4-1.
Yeah,
Rafa, make sure it's not 5-1, please.
And you know he will. He'll go there and take a knee out.
He will definitely do that. Now, one thing I would be remiss, Dan. I was going to do it here for Mexico, but it seems like we need to, you know, just for a little bit for the Chivas fans, because I do feel so bad for them that their poor coach on his way out, looking at some bad seasons up ahead with their new policy. Just a year removed from winning their championship. Very unfortunate for
now. Now we get to hear Chivistas go back to my one of my favorite one of their favorite cries is well, you know what? At least we send players to Europe, so we'll see if they're able to continue at least in that respect.
Okay.
Because. I've been, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe some of our Chiva hermanos could chime in here. The reported fee that they paid for Pizarro was 18 million?
I thought it was 20.
20, okay. So 18, 20. And they're going to sell him, or they're going to let him go for 8 or 10?
Yeah, it was stupid.
Well, I mean, that's the problem with Chivas is that they have to pay the, you know, they're already going to pay a premium because it's a Mexican player, and then a double premium because it's all they can do. So, and anytime Chivas goes to buy anything, it's a seller's market, and then vice versa.
The European market undervalues Mexican players, and the Mexican market overvalues Mexican players, especially.
Right.
And that's where they end up losing. I mean, they sold Salcedo for $5 million. Salcedo, who was already in playing in Europe, and they sold him for $5 million. I thought that was ridiculous. I mean,
but it's what the market bears. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, Pizarro is worth in year. I mean, if he goes to a European team, is going to be what they're going to pay, like $3-4 million for him.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
So Chivas pays 20, which again is you know, I ask the question, you know, why on earth would they want to get rid of that? I mean, at least get a return for your investment. Because otherwise, I mean, if you sell him to Tigres for 6, what's the point? You're not going to get another guy like him. It's a very, very sad time for Chivas fans. Now we could certainly do that. You know, you contrast that with Real Madrid, with Zidane, you know, basically doing the George Costanza, you know, tells the joke and then leaves the conference room. And everyone thinks, oh, man, they always have a good memory. He just wins the Champions League for the third year in a row. And he says, you know what, I'm done. And he got a standing ovation at the end of his press conference today. People clapping for him as he walks off. And
I heard it's because he didn't want to bring in more players.
And you know, go ahead.
Perez wanted to bring in more. more players.
See, I also heard it was that the locker room was shattered and he didn't want to deal with it anymore. And you know, to which I say, you know, what more does he have to prove there? You know, he wants to go try and do something else. I mean, you know, that if you can walk away from that club with that kind of with your reputation still intact, I mean, you are. I mean, you know, no coach is going to be hotter than Zizou in the upcoming market.
How could he not, though? This is a team with all the superstars and all the money to buy all these players. How could you not? It's like Joel saying that anybody could have brought River out of the Lave. Anybody could have coached Real Madrid to what they did with all those players and the quality of players.
The thing is that they've always had those players, and that was the first time in the modern era that they'd done that. So, I mean, it wasn't like this is anything new.
The Messi MSN broke up. Barcelona was sort of on the decline, so this, you know, is a prime opportunity for him. I think he might if he goes anywhere else. I'm not having high hopes for him.
Well, I hear that there's going to be an opening.
I think he might be going for the France job.
Not Chivas. Is Chivas his safety school?
That's his backup.
Yeah, that's his backup is to.
Same color as France.
See, I didn't think that I would have a reason to play this, but I will play it if they pull it off. Of course, they won't, though.
If he does go to Chivas,
I don't think you're going to play that for a long time, John.
If he goes to Chivas or to another team, I don't. It's not going to be exactly the same because he was a great player and everything, but I see his coaching career ending up like Sven's. You know, really hype at the beginning, and then when he goes somewhere else, it just like, oh,
come yeah. On. But I mean, come on, Sven won one title in Italy, and that was it. You know, this is.
Yeah, well, it's not exactly the same, but it's.
I think what Zidane showed was that he's an excellent at minimum knows how to manage players. I mean, that's yeah,
and he
that's
reads
not easy. Really
well. But he did when he came on. What he did was big because. Real Madrid was playing bad. And I think he removed James. He took James out. Casemiro in. And it completely changed the team, how the team played. Because they didn't have a real defensive midfielder.
Right.
And like that, tactically, that like improved the team like exponentially right away as soon as he came in. So I mean, he's shown that tactically he can play with coach with the best of them. Obviously, he has a shitload of talent. So that helps.
Yeah, I mean, and they're always I always joke whoever has becomes the quote unquote star of the World Cup, within 2 weeks after the World Cup being over, he will sign for Real Madrid if he doesn't already play for them already, and that's just the reality, whether they need him or not. You know, they're the team. They're like, I just have to have it. That's just what they do. So, whether Zidane is there or whoever coaches them, that they're always going to have players, and every year they're going to make a huge signing. And that's just who they are and who they've been and who they will continue to be. Just like Chivas. So Zidane can just, it'll be a seamless transition from Real Madrid to Chivas for Zidane when he lands in Guadalajara. And he already speaks Spanish, Chivas needs to make this happen. I could just hear the conversation where you go, Travieso Guzmán, Zinedine Zidane. Hay que ir por Travieso.
But turning it the other way, do you think Zidane is going to want to coach a rink-a-dink team?
Was Rodrigo, did you say he was he wants to coach France?
I mean, I don't know that, but I would imagine that would be like his next, yeah. Like what he would want to do. I mean, he coached like one of the best teams in the world. What would be next? A national team, and I don't think France is going to win the World Cup, to be honest. So I think they fire that coach, and then he'll be able to step in with one of their best generations that they've had since he was there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think that Mourinho wants to coach Portugal before he's done. That'd be his last stop. So it's and I actually have heard that too, that France is definitely where he supposedly is wanting to try his luck next. So I guess that means Chivas is out then for Zizou.
I mean, I could see Almeida going to coach Argentina if Mexico doesn't come calling as well.
Yeah, Mexico would be like we just woke Joel up.
No, I was just gonna say I don't think Almeida is first choice in Argentina. I think that takes someone like Piojo, even like Gallardo. Because Almeida is rated highly in Mexico, but not so much in Argentina. They're not going to see him promoting two teams from La B as much as they're going to see like Gallardo winning the Libertadores or just what Simeone has done or even Sampaoli has done. So he's quite down in the pecking order.
I don't think so. I was just in South America, and I was watching ESPN Argentina, and they were speaking pretty highly of him. I mean, they even had him on as a commentator for the Champions League.
How do you do?
And I didn't watch Champions League there, but I mean, I was watching I was there like 2 days before the Champions League, and he was doing pretty well as a commentator. They were speaking pretty well of him.
So he's got a little side gig he can do before he finds his new one.
Yeah.
So he likes to Piojo it up.
Tell me the last time they hired a coach with his credentials.
They don't hire rink-a-dink coaches.
Diego Maradona, and he hadn't coached anybody.
But I kind of agree
Diego,
with Weldo.
Diego, come on, man. Diego
I agree with Weldo. I don't think
icon right there.
I'm still of the opinion that they don't really value the Mexican League or Mexico that highly in terms of football. So I don't think that him winning the CONCACAF, him winning the league, and him winning a couple of cups is going to be highly regarded in Argentina. At least not enough to a point where they're like, all right, we should really get this guy to coach the national team.
Yeah, and you know, if he's doing that, just to go on with dancing, if he's doing if his league record with Chivas was the same in Argentina, the fans would have booted him out long ago. I think in Mexico, we're very forgiving, you know. We're more hopeful. Now over there, they're less likely to have you, contention.
The situations are relative, though, because had Almeida not won the title, then the fans would have been totally on his ass this year. For having as bad as they did,
they gave him a big cushion.
Yeah, it was like you found like one of those rings in Dungeons and Dragons where he puts him like in a force field for a year. You know, nothing's gonna happen to him.
He found an infinity stone.
Exactly.
They do speak sometimes good about him, but I think all the general overall consensus on they're just not gonna see him as he's not like the top choice. Probably like fifth place or below.
So, what about another club in Argentina?
Yeah, there is clubs that have been wanting to go after him. But I mean, again, he's taking a massive pay cut. You know?
Or he might go to Europe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but there hasn't been offers. You know,
that's another thing too. Like again, I think it goes back to the whole, the lack of prestige that the Mexican league has. I don't know if that's gonna open all kinds of doors for him. I think his best option right now, if he wants to make a significant step up in like the echelon of good coaches, is probably to coach Mexico. He seems to be the most popular name, at least, or one of the most, and if he could. eke out something like a performance that Mexico hasn't been able to do prior, then his stock goes infinitely high, because then like he'll be able to claim that he's done something that no one else has. His other options, I think, is probably just to go back to Argentina, work for less, and then win some championships there, and then hope. Because I don't know. I just don't. Maybe I'm undervaluing, but I just don't see people that are even aware of the Mexican league. It's not so much that they diminish it; they're just largely unaware of it.
Yeah, it's also the region that, and so they see CONCACAF as being low tier, and they just
inferior.
They don't respect it as much as they should. Even though, like, you've seen teams like Costa Rica, the U.S., and Mexico, they do good at the World Cup. I mean, they're not exactly challenging to win it, but they hold their own. They get good results.
And I could see praise. I don't know how. I wish I could listen to the news when they were in Argentina when they were praising Almeida. But I can see them praising him for, going to Mexico and showing the Mexicans how to play and winning championships with a handicap.
Como que showing the Mexicans how to play?
Well, a handicap. You taking a handicap team that's only allowed to sign Mexican. Well,
it's not like they're playing 10 versus 11 each time.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something.
Keep going, Beto. I love your tone.
They're very supportive. I think like in Argentina, they'll be very supportive of their coaches and players when they're abroad. They're more supportive, more so than when they're in their own club, you know? I don't know if I'm explaining myself right.
Beto, it sounds like you're saying that Guadalajara should ride the short bus to the stadium, the way you're describing
them. No.
They're at a disadvantage.
They're not at a disadvantage.
They're limited to a player pool to just, to like a half or whatever it is, a player pool that all the other teams have.
Here's where you're right. As long as they make it a disadvantage, they're not taking full advantage of their disadvantage. That's how I see that. I mean, if they know that they're going to be disadvantaged, then they have to plan for that and know that. They don't do that, and they haven't, as Joel has pointed out numerous times on this podcast.
So it takes extra brains, takes extra planning, takes extra youth development. Whereas other teams, they can fail or they can slack off in those other categories where Chivas can't. They can't risk not bringing up good youth. They can't risk, all these. Whereas another team can just buy a South.
Chivas has hurt themselves because they used to be one of the clubs where, if you're a Mexican player, they all wanted to be in that team. You know, there's few clubs that, as kids growing up, they're like, all right, I want to play in that. And they don't see it like that anymore. It's because other clubs play really good and more want to go to Europe. And then where Chivas hurt themselves is the way they've been treating staff and players, the way they let them go. Even with Bravo, when Vergara was saying he left through the back door and just bad-mouthing him, the way a lot of these guys have been let go very unceremoniously, treated really bad, even like Bofo and other players, and the coaching too. So it makes for not a place where not a lot of people want to go in and have a career. Where it's just what you need. If you have a player like Gallito, you would want to hold on to him until he retires.
Yes, it all goes back to what you guys are saying is the management. Vergara, had shown his ineptitude for years, and Higuera is just a cancer. You can tell just from that Picante episode, that guy is just someone I don't want. You wouldn't want to even be around, and much less be an employee of.
Wow. That's
look at the way he treated that dude, Piedra Santa, Ainiveles, and looking down on him, calling him what's that name? Calling him some cartoon character.
Lina? Silvestre.
No.
Capulina.
Capulina.
Oh, yeah.
That guy just if you get on his bad side, he's just going to look down on you and humiliate you. And so, I mean, I don't know what I'm
making. Just the kind of guy that you want running a team, because he's going to make personal decisions. You know, you're based on his emotions, essentially.
That's not good.
No, not at all. So Chivas fans, you have that to look forward to for the next couple of years too. See how that ends up playing out. Now, Chiquis, before we go, I know that we had the Champions League final. It was won by Real Madrid, 3-1 over Liverpool. Gareth Bale, who had just been subbed on, came on and scored two goals after Benzema got the opening goal on a great play by him, where he put his foot out where the goalkeeper, was throwing the ball out, and it hit his foot and went right in the net. And it was 1-0. But there was a play where Sergio Ramos and Mo Salah got tangled up, and Mo Salah fell awkwardly, and he injured his shoulder. It looks like it was just a mild shoulder separation, which is, I think, good news for the entire world, because hopefully we will get to see him play in the World Cup. And you analyzed the play, Chiquis, and you posted something on our YouTube. So tell us what you saw based on your experience in other sports.
Okay, yeah, so I think a day or two after the game, the European Judo Association or something posted a tweet about basically what he did looked very similar to a judo move, basically a throw to take somebody down on the ground and do whatever on the ground. But they don't know soccer, so they were wrong. Ramos toe poked that ball, which made it look like he was trying to get his hips underneath Mo Salah's hips, and in that way sort of grab his arm and throw him on the ground. But the toe poke is, that's a normal play. Everyone does that. They try to reach out, dispossess the guy. Unfortunately, when they got their arms tangled up, they fell down, and Mo Salah, he was trying to prevent Ramos from getting in front of him, and so pushed into Ramos's hips, forcing him to lose further balance since he was just on one foot, attempting a toe poke. And so they just, the momentum was increased because of that. And unfortunately, he fell right on that shoulder instead of on his side, where Ramos fell exactly on his side. He was able to turn a lot more because I guess the momentum wasn't as much.
Right. And what prevented Mo Salah from turning the way that Ramos was able to turn?
I thought it was the fact that he kept holding onto his arm.
Well, you mean Mo Salah was holding onto his arm?
No, Ramos was holding his arm the whole time. He never let go. So he never had that arm to even try to break his fall or to even change the way he fell, because he was holding, he had it pinned to his side. At least that's the way I saw it. It seemed like he hooked him, yeah, and he just had him pinned. So he was going to fall however he was going to fall, because Ramos had him like locked in. He was just going to fall just however he fell. He had no way to break any of that momentum.
Well, that's the other issue. Like I talked about the lower body, the upper body, Ramos put his arm in front to, of course, stop momentum to try to get the ball. Mo Salah actually grabbed Ramos's arm as well.
Why did he grab Ramos?
To stop him from trying to get in front of him. So they both were trying to prevent.
Well, see, that's where I'm going to disagree with you there, because
the minute
Mo Salah grabs his arm is because he has lost his footing. He's lost his balance. He's trying to fall on the ground.
This was before the fall. This is when they're fighting for who could get to the ball quicker.
Right.
Ramos put his left arm in front to try to pull back Mo Salah and get access to the ball quicker first, And then Mo Salah reacted to that and grabbed Ramos's arm to hold him back and stop him from getting in front of his body and getting closer to the ball. In the act of doing that, he grabbed onto Ramos's arm and also pushed his body into Ramos's body to push him off the ball. But Ramos had already tried to grab the ball and was on one foot, basically off balance, so he was falling. Mo Salah was pushing into him, making him fall even harder, and of course falling with him. Ramos did hold on, and when he was falling, it does look like, I admit, and to me it looks a little bit suspicious, it does look like Ramos's left arm is a little bit tucked into his chest, holding Mo Salah's arm.
Dude, not only is he holding his arm, but he turned his body as he was falling, so that he would hang onto the arm even more.
No, that's no problem though. That's no issue. The issue is holding it on initially.
Right.
Once he falls over, it's like, he's not going to move to the side. But it happened so quick. There is no way Mo Salah was going to move and land on his side.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, again, Ramos knew exactly what he was doing.
No.
I'm not saying he was trying to hurt the guy, but I know that he was definitely sending a message. And
100% agree with you.
When he was falling, he
I don't think he meant for to hurt him. Arm. Absolutely yeah, exactly. not. But he meant to sure like you're not he meant to getting shake this him up, ball
for sure. Yeah.
And you're going down. I'm making he meant sure to shake you're going down.
That's just who he is, dude. He's the most red carded player in La Liga. He's the dirtiest player in La Liga.
that's just.
But you know what? But the thing is that he does this every game, and I'm not saying that he hooks a guy like that, but he. You know, he is a defender. I mean, that is his style, and it works for him, and he gets away with it, so he's going to do it more.
But to even know that you're going to slam some dude's shoulder,
that's the point, dude. He didn't know that was going to happen. He knew that if he held on to the arm, that something was going to happen to Mo. He didn't expect him to hurt him, but he knew that he knew exactly what he was doing.
It doesn't make sense because if he would have done everything right to hurt him, he wouldn't have let go towards the end. He braced himself with his left arm the same way that Mo Salah braced himself with the left arm. The only thing is he turned into it and he wasn't even holding on to the arm.
Dude, I'm not saying he was trying to hurt him. I'm just saying he was trying to send a message. He was trying to bring him. It's like when a defensive lineman hits the quarterback on a legal play and just drives him in a little more than he probably should, you know, just to the edge of the.
He might be true on that, but I'll,
there's no question.
He's a notoriously dirty player.
I don't see any.
It's what he does. It's what he does. Really egregious. Like you said, like he's a real hard nose. He likes to, you know, like straddle the fence of getting calls, but like John said, he doesn't
light
get
in the dark.
He's able to get away with most of them. It's good defending. Beppe is another one who's also another defender who's a lot of the times dirty, but you know it's part of being a defender. I don't blame the guy. I mean, they won the game, he got away with it. But to try to excuse and say like it wasn't a dirty play, no, it was a dirty play. But it's part of the game. I mean, and it's how he plays.
He didn't with malicious intent try to like I'm going to drive this guy short on the ground. But when he grabbed him, he just wanted to bring him down awkwardly. That's all he wanted.
No, I do think he had malicious intent. I don't think he wanted to separate his shoulder. I think he wanted to hurt him.
It's an exaggeration when I hear dirty, when I hear delinquent, when I hear all these insults that he's been receiving. It was just a hard. I wouldn't even go to the extent of malicious or.
Well, he was sending a message.
I would call it an aggressive play. He was aggressive.
Well, I'm not basing this on this one event. I'm basing this on like years of watching him play. That's what he does, man. He's a dirty player. He does stuff like that. Maybe not exactly but he does other things that like
the penalty is worth it to him to do what he does.
It's aggression. Like you can even tell even before, and if aggression results in being dirty, I guess that's true. But you can even tell before, like Mo Salah has the ball and it's bouncing in front of him. The hunger, between the both of those players going after that ball, was 100% more greater on Ramos's side. He was going after that ball. Mosala sort of like was on the defensive, was and the difference was there. I mean, if you are not fully aggressive and fully in tune in the game, you're going to get yourself hurt. And that's sort of what happened here. The more aggressive player in a physical altercation is gonna.
I don't think it had a thing of like, yes, maybe his style is aggressive, but the move itself, I don't care how aggressive you are. Someone's holding onto your arm and they decide to fall. You're gonna fall along with them. That's what I saw. Basically saw him grab his arm and say, like, "All right, I'm falling and I'm fucking bringing you down with me."
Watch it. No, that's not the case. I'll watch the video in slow mo.
That's how I saw it.
Exactly.
He lets go of the arm. The arm is really nothing.
He grabs his arm and he twists his body around as he's falling.
Exactly.
It's indisputable.
Like it was
proof.
It would be physically impossible for him not to just be taken along with him.
He had plenty of space in that.
Actually surprised that his shoulder wasn't separated from the actual pull itself, not the fall.
No way, dude. No, that's what I was about to say. Like in jiu-jitsu, the arm bar is very common. So I initially thought that his right arm was going to be injured because of the arm bar. There is no way. But
he's not trying to do anything to the arm. He just couldn't brace himself properly on the.
That's because he went too hard into it.
Dude, he had no balance. That's the whole point of it. When he first grabs onto him, when he grabs him, it's because Salah had already lost his legs. There was nothing he could do to regain his balance.
Ramos was on one leg.
Also understand that what we're seeing in the slow-mo, we're thinking like, remember, this happened in like 1.3 seconds?
Yeah, exactly.
So, again.
If he's some type of judo expert to be able to do all that stuff,
but he didn't do anything. All we're saying, Chiquis, is when he was going down, he felt Salah's arm in there. He pinned it down. He said, "You're going to come down with me," and he turned his body. Whatever happened before that just doesn't matter.
Oh no! What happened before that really does matter.
Well, it sets up. Yeah, but the play where Salah got injured was when he fell, and he fell because Sergio Ramos pinned him. And again, you know, it's not a quote unquote illegal, but it's a Bush League play, but you know it works for him. That's the kind of player he is.
Yeah, I chalk it up to aggression. The arm bar that he could have really injured and hyperextended the right arm, but he didn't turn his back to him. Whenever they fell, he turned towards the front. So that's being merciful. That's like letting loose of his arm. But yeah, I mean, I guess we're just gonna have to agree to disagree on this one.
Well, I mean, you were talking about all the stuff that happened beforehand. When they actually fall, the dude grabs his arm and Ben pulls him down. Period.
He was when they were getting close to the ground, he was bracing. He had no time to hold onto his arm. He was bracing for the fall.
Well, he'd already pulled him down. The damage had already done. You're looking at something in slow mo where you think it's going to take however long. It takes you know less than a half a second for him to do that. He had to brace himself too. At that point, so he's every man for himself. So he braces himself. That's when he lets go.
So that few milliseconds, Mo was holding onto his arm as well.
He
trapped it himself.
Chiquis, again, he pins his arm and he pulls him. You can see the body.
There's plenty of space. I don't see it.
The body.
If he wanted to pin, his elbow would be touching his chest. There's no time in that instance.
It doesn't need that much time.
There's no instance in that.
Time. All he has to do is just give him a yank because he's already fallen down.
There was no yank either.
Okay.
The only yank that could have been was when Mo Salah grabbed his arm and pulled it, and that was it. And then they're preparing for the fall.
Dan,
they're extending.
Dan, help me out here. Don't tell me. Oh, did we lose Dan?
We lost Dan.
No. Well, I guess we can agree to it. But I mean, I'm not saying it's an illegal play or anything like that. But he definitely knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing, and to pretend otherwise is.
We'll have to hypnotize him and find out the innards of his mind.
Yeah. So, that's what that means. I mean, remember a defender got Zizou, you know, one of the greatest players of our generation, to headbutt him in a World Cup final.
That's a less skillful. Technique, but yeah,
but easily, you know, very effective as well. At least in that such equally effective.
Yeah.
Well, but again, the good news about Mo Salah is that it looks like he's only going to be out for a couple of weeks, and he will be he will definitely probably. Well, I don't know if he'll start against Uruguay, but I think he'll definitely play. He will be in the World Cup, and they knocked out Liverpool's best player, and they really didn't have that much, even though they did get an equalizing goal. It was just going to be a matter of time for Real to win that game, goalie mistakes or not. So congratulations to them. And then Zizou gets to ride off into the sunset. 3-time winner of the Champions League. Not a bad career for him as a coach. Gentlemen, we should probably wrap it up here. Joel, did you have any other questions or comments before we wrap it up?
No, I'm good. I'm good, John.
Yeah. So no.
Oh, yes. I had one last, actually. I was not asked who should come in.
I did ask who should come in. You just didn't answer.
No. I thought you asked Rigo. That's why.
I asked. I asked all. That was a blanket Chivarmano question.
It went into Rinky Dink. Calling Vuce Rinky Dink. But I would say Tena. I'll go for Tena.
Which
Olympic
one?
Hero. Olympic hero. Gold medal.
Well, I thought he's like the GM of Querétaro right now.
You could buy him out. Querétaro is good friends with...
Querétaro is like Chivas Light.
Well, the president, I forget his name, but the president is the cousin of Viera.
Oh, how convenient.
Yeah, it all comes full circle.
Yeah.
They got Ordiales. They got Ordiales. They got... Jesus, this young player, I keep forgetting his name right now.
Orbelin.
Orbelin. Yeah, Orbelin. That's where they, you know, got him at a bargain buy.
Well, that's where they send all their Chivas on loan is the Querétaro. Querétaro is
the new Dorado. Chivas.
Yeah, or the you know what they're what Veracruz is the Club America.
Yeah. Yeah, San Luis at one point. But you know, I just think he's got experience coaching. He, you know, and with youth as well and in the league. So, but I mean, if it's GM, sometimes when they become GM, when, you know, they're probably tired of the whole coaching hoopla.
Yeah, how long is the Anda going to last?
Oh, man, who knows? Who knows? The GM position at Chivas, there's been so many. Some of them last 6 months, some of them last a year. It's very shaky. We've had a lot of GMs from Palencia, Querétaro's current coach. The names skip me right now, John.
You know, Paco Palencia became the coach of Lobos Buap.
Lobos Buap, yeah. Go for a circle, huh? Because he was with Rafa Puente. Him and Rafa Puente worked at Chivas at the same time. They weren't getting along, but it's interesting. Yeah, that would be my first choice. You know, second choice probably De Los Cobos.
He just went to El Salvador, if I'm not mistaken.
I know, that's kind of sad. You can't find. And I mean, you even have Galindo, but I know they're not going to give him a job.
Is Galindo De La Torre
who knows,
too?
Who knows?
So were the De La Torres used like the House Frey, the two towers as their as their crest?
Yeah, pretty much, man.
So
yeah,
is Nestor or Chepo Lord Walder then?
No, it would be Nestor.
Nestor.
Nestor will be the one, but yeah, man, we have. So it's looking like they might probably going for someone from abroad, but I mean, if you're concentrating on youth, because that's what you have, then at least get someone that's proven or that's done that before, you know. Don't just bring in a coach and then.
Maybe they'll bring back Hans Westerhoff.
He's unfortunately, sadly, he's been kind of sick, and he just does consultation. So, I mean, I would bring him just to set up the youth, you know, program. Just go see if they're still doing things the right way. you know, or the way they were before when it was working, when the team was doing really good. But yeah, I don't think he wants to coach. I mean, if he did, that would be a brilliant move. And I think that was very popular with the fans. It was him.
Didn't you get a chance to visit with Hans once?
I did, John. It was at the Home Depot Center, now known as the Dick's Sporting Goods. Or what is it?
I thought it was the StubHub Center.
Yeah, the StubHub. Te confuso, John. No, I went, and so it was going to be the first game of Chivas USA, and I went to pick up my press pass, and on the way back...
Was Hans the one in the window giving out the press passes?
No, I ran into the media guy, the media chief, and he's like, "Hey man, the team's training in this field if you want to go check it out." And I head on over there thinking there's going to be all these reporters, and no one was covering it. And so I get there and I was a bit overwhelmed because the Chiva top brass at the moment, they were all there, you know. It was Vergara, it was Juan Jose Franchi, it was Ibar Cisniega, it was Nestor and Hans. It was, you know, the whole group that came in, you know, when they had just taken over Chivas. And then they left.
You saw Nestor?
Yeah, I saw all of them were just right there, man. I was like, you know. But they all left. They were just talking to Hans, and then they left. And Hans was by himself, and I was like, you know, I just went up to him, asked him if he could talk, and we talked for like a good hour.
Did you and Nestor have a moment?
No. I talked to Hans. Those guys left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I talked to Hans Westerhoff. He's.
Did you learn anything?
Yeah, I did learn quite a few things, like, you know, just philosophy that he had. Because I had seen this one game where it was Chivas. I think they were playing San Luis. And it was the last game of the season. And Chivas needed to win to qualify to Liguilla. And at this point, they're losing 1-0. And they just had, I don't know if it was one or two players red carded. And he throws in this one player from the youth. I'm forgetting his name. God damn, I'm forgetting his name. He was unfortunate because this guy had Ajax had invited him to give him a tryout, and he broke his arm, and then after that he never recovered. We never really heard from him again. I'm forgetting his name, but he throws him in there, and this guy goes on to give two assists, and Chivas wins. So I was asking him, like, how do you hype up a young player like that, or what were you thinking? You know, the season, you know, the season could end now, and you're throwing this guy. I was asking him what he told the player, you know, if he motivated him, and he's looking at me like I'm dumb or something. And he's like, I don't have to tell him anything. He just has to do what he trains for every day. And I was like, oh, that's simple. You know?
There you go. So I was just watching. They just had the clip where they announced Paco de Anda as the GM at Chivas.
Yes.
And the body language from Almeida is
hilarious. Yeah. I got criticized for that, John. In big soccer, I gotta call those guys out.
You know, I gotta tell you. I remember one time I did a thing on body language. I think Carlos Vela, like it is at the press conference. And they're asking him a question. This was like during the whole thing. You could tell that there was obviously something was going on in his life because he just did not want to be there, didn't want to talk. Wouldn't look at the reporters. He'd just like look off into the distance and like, you know, just his just totally, you know, turning his body away from the folks. I mean, just a classic body language trait. And yeah, the same thing. Hoyle, it's like, oh, you know what you're talking about. You know, there's no such thing. I'm like, okay.
Sure. Yeah. You can see the pictures where they're all smiling, and the man that looks like
yeah,
he just ran over his dog.
And he's got his hands in his pockets. He's like,
yes.
You know, and then, you know, when he sits down, everyone's at the table and they got their hands and they're talking, and he's got his arms crossed, and then he's not saying a word. Everyone is smiling but him. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty odd. I mean, that's you know.
Yeah, he knew. He wanted Galindo. He actually wanted to bring in Galindo. Because I think Galindo's son is dating his daughter. Something like that. So he wanted to keep it in the family.
The future yerno.
No, yeah, but I think that's how he met Galindo, you know. He got close to him, and it made good sense, you know. Galindo's a former Chiva, you know, coaching experience, everything, and that's who he wanted to work with. But when you see the Anda coming, then you know that they were at that point. They were done with Galindo's, not Galindo, Almeida's fast track pass was over. They had given him one after the league title. They were basically like, whatever you want to be in charge of, you know, go ahead. It's all you.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, it has to be so frustrating for a Chivas fan to see decisions that are made, you know, and then the consequences of those decisions just over and over and over and over again.
But you know what, John? I don't think he was gonna do good. I know fans were hopeful, but he just wasn't. He wasn't happy at the team. He wasn't happy with the, you know.
No, I know. I understand that whole. But what I'm saying is, you know, after the championships, hey, you know, we want to, you know, give him a little more control to see what else he can do.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They lost a lot of money, not just on player transfers, but like selling to like Alanis. That's a good like $8 million that they lost. Just on Alanis leaving on a free transfer. That's anywhere from 4 to 8 million on a potential World Cup player.
Well, yeah, but again, they did that to themselves. I mean, like
the decision they
make is just, and again, you know, it just seems to me like when you make things personal and you use your feelings to make these, because that's what it seems like is happening.
Yeah.
With the guy in charge, then.
With a lack of experience too, because he's in financing. He doesn't come from a football background. That's where I felt that he made a mistake with the De La Torres. I mean, I think he should have laid back, learned a thing or two, at least as far as like how things are in like Liga MX, you know?
Right.
Because like, you know, one thing we've seen with Peláez, just how quick he was able to build a squad at Cruz Azul. Like if you know the right people and if you have the right contacts, you put it together a team and not break the bank. And Higuera was the opposite, man. He was just 20 million, okay, 18 million, 15. He was just...
Right. He's like Daniel thinking he's owning a fantasy team.
Yeah, he's just he's making it rain, you know, and I think to have won the league, he thought like, you know, it was justified, but he might not be able to do it again like that. And he could just keep spending and spending and the club would just go into financial ruin.
Well, isn't that kind of what's happening right now?
It is. I mean, they bought Gullit for about 8 to 10 million and then sell him for 2.
Well, I mean, that's what's going to happen with Pizarro and Pulido. I mean, they're going to, if they end up selling him, they're going to be.
Pizarro.
So yeah, that's the thing. Is that to me, I mean, you sell the players that you make. You don't sell the players that you buy, because you're never going to get the return on them. It's not going to happen. Again, who makes these decisions for these guys? It's just.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason they brought in the Anda, because, you know, they Vergara figured that Higuera was in over his head. And Almeida, as popular as he is, he's still new, you know, to the league.
How do Chivas fans put up with this stuff, man?
They've been used to it, John, like you know. Yeah. It's been happening since the 70s.
Your skin is tougher than leather to have to be a Chivas fan.
No, I think that's just became acceptable. Like one league every 10 years.
Ah, so you've normalized it.
Sadly, it has been.
Well, you know, as a Pumas fan, I'm not really one to talk, but hopefully they will get their act together soon, because that's another club that just, you know, every decision they make seems to be the exact opposite of what really needs to happen. Very bizarre. Chickies, I know I was trying to wrap it up and went off on a 20-minute tangent.
Good stuff.
But Chickies, any last thoughts for you before we wrap it up? A little last call here, the Cantina MX podcast.
No, that's pretty much it. Just maybe, I guess after the World Cup or in the future, we're gonna have some Chicano talk.
Oh,
Liga MX English language talk with some guests.
So that'll be great. We're looking forward to that. And then, you know, next week I guess is going to have to be our big World Cup preview. I'm going to break out the predictions we made back in December. We'll get a, you know, we'll have to figure out a way to see how many changes we're allowed to make on our pay. I don't think there'll be that many changes, but we'll break that out. We'll discuss that. And then the following week, that Thursday, the World Cup will have started. Well, of course, with that real crackerjack game between Russia and Saudi Arabia. You know, I always make, you know, the games that aren't necessarily the most attractive games, as far as countries and this and that, always end up being like the most entertaining games at the World Cup. I remember, I think it was Tunisia, Saudi Arabia, and Germany in the Germany World Cup. And there's no way I'm going to watch that game. Why would I even bother? Some friends of mine had that attitude, and then I watched the game, and it was outstanding. It was just end-to-end action. It was fun. It was great. It was a really, really entertaining game. So hopefully the Russia-Saudi Arabia game will be a very entertaining game that Thursday. And then Friday we get the usual first-round triple header, but on that first Saturday of the World Cup, there's a four banger. We get four games. So we have soccer from, at least for us in Central Time Zone, from 5 a.m. all the way up to 3 p.m. So it's going to be great. And of course, on Sunday, Judgment Day for Mexico in their game against the Germans. So hopefully they can hopefully they'll be able to minimize the damage there.
Yes.
Chickies, do we have anybody on our chat heat up tonight?
Sergio was on. The Goat Main was on.
Uh oh, were our fellow Chivas fans? Are they okay? Are they as pragmatic as our Chivas Mano on the show?
He wasn't having any episode or anything. So,
all right,
he seemed okay.
Well, again, for the Chivas Manos, big news today. But hopefully things will work out, or I guess as Jorge says, just understand that this is just how things are with Chivas, and, you know, we move on. But we are very happy that you guys joined us here in the Cantina MX podcast. Looking forward to our World Cup preview next week, and we will hopefully figure out a way to get y'all's predictions. Also, we'll have to figure out a way to do that here at the Cantina MX podcast, and hopefully we'll get some participation there. But we appreciate y'all listening here tonight. Joel, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, anytime, John. Always glad to be part of the show.
Well, it's great to have you on, Chickies. Thanks again for helping out and doing everything for the show.
Yeah, thank you.
And you know, before we go, Chickies, I have to say that that your analysis, I know you're a jiu-jitsu man and a judoka, but it was just wrong.
Incredible.
Well, my name is John Jagu. We do appreciate y'all joining us here in the Cantina MX podcast. For Rigo Ayala, who called in, and Daniel Preciado, who joined us and dropped off a little earlier, appreciate them coming on. Appreciate you listening to us. You can listen to us live every Thursday here on our YouTube channel. And then you can also download this and our previous editions of the podcast from the Podcast Center on iTunes. And this will be up usually by noon the next day. So we do appreciate y'all listening to us and continued support. My name is John Jagu. We'll talk to you guys next week.